following takes place between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m. Events occur.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's FBC Radio Live. It's Monday morning. That's right. Welcome, everyone. It's a brand new week here. We're getting closer and closer to the holiday season. Happy Hanukkah to everyone out there who's been celebrating. Of course, Christmas is just around the corner. And most importantly, John, most importantly, we are just 17 days away from Festivus, my friend. And it's going to be quite the celebration here on FBC Radio.
Oh, without question, that's the biggest holiday we look forward to.
Oh, of course, the only holiday I look forward to.
Very much so. More so than Thanksgiving, because you hate turkey.
Well, no, I love Thanksgiving. Don't get me. I love Thanksgiving. I just hate turkey. That's why, you know, I don't want you and the listeners out there to...
I misquoted.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to be, given a reputation for being a crumb bum on Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving. I'm a very big fan of Thanksgiving, just as long as I get Thanksgiving the way I want it, because, well, I believe that it's true. Yeah, weird day yesterday in the NFL. No Aaron Rodgers, so that was kind of quiet. No Patriots, obviously, they play tonight. We're going to talk about that there, the Buffalo Bills. But we did get another Tampa Bay victory. Tom Brady is now 10-0. Against the Atlanta Falcons, and I'm not even upset necessarily that he threw the pick six. I'm more upset that because of that interception, it screwed up a perfect 28-3 touchdown to interception ratio Brady has against the Atlanta Falcons. It is now 28-4. I just wish, John, if that's the only reason I'll take it back. You know what I mean? That's why I want to take the interception back. Not that it will help Brady's stats. I want that ratio.
So when you play Powerball, obviously 28-3 are two numbers you pick. Obviously, I'm sure 12-7, Brady's number, Brady's Super Bowls, like maybe 10, because that was his number at Michigan.
Yeah. Well, I got it hanging up over my right shoulder right now.
Yeah. So, and do we remember what number he played, wore in high school? Because I remember I was in a mall in New Hampshire after the Super Bowl, and I was still, like, throwing up on the side every time I saw anything with Brady, because, you know, that was Roger's Super Bowl to win. But they were selling his high school jersey.
Was it eight?
It might have been eight, and I'm trying to think, eight or nine?
I think it was a single digit.
What was Young's number?
Steve Young? Eight.
Yeah. It might have been eight, because I'm assuming when Brady was in high school, he obviously grew up a huge 49ers fan. He loved Montana, and I'm sure he loved Steve Young. So maybe he wore eight, because I know Rodgers was the same thing. Steve Young was this guy. Steve Young was the best quarterback in football, or right in the discussion with Elway and Aikman and whoever else back in the early 90s when they were all in high school. So I think it was eight. So if you can get his high school, in fact, if I get to that mall again, which I will, I'll seek out that jersey, and that'll be a late Thanksgiving Christmas present for you. I got to see if they still have it up there. They had it last year.
Well, I will add it to my collection. I don't currently own a Brady Bucks jersey, and I will not until he retires. And I will then buy one to add to, you know, the collection, not so much as to buy, but I have a very, personal code of team ethics that I like to follow when it comes to supporting other players on other teams. Like I said, I'm not going to wear his Bucks jersey while he's playing. I refuse to do that. I am a Brady fan. I'm not necessarily a Buccaneers fan. I am a I root for them by virtue of rooting for Tom Brady. So like yesterday, John, as a fan, I was sitting there saying, like, all right, Tampa Bay defense, I just want to see you give up a bunch of yards and points, because I just want Brady to keep padding those stats, my friend. Just pad him, get him out there, let him throw, let him pile it on. That's the best thing about being just a Brady fan and not a fan of the actual team, because, you know, in the past, obviously, you'd see that, and then, you know, if it was the Patriots, be like, no, stop, please, just stop. I don't care how many touchdowns he throws, I just want the Patriots to win the game. And generally they did because, well, Brady was the quarterback. But now it's kind of it's a little bit looser now. It's a little bit freer to root for Brady and not necessarily the team.
Well, I mean, you're at the point with Brady with 7 Super Bowls. If he doesn't win another Super Bowl, no one's going to discuss that he's not the greatest quarterback in the history of football. And maybe
they do it now. They do it now. They will. Oh, trust me, Brady has to win. Brady has to win a Super Bowl, or he's done, or he's finished, or he's considered done.
Yeah, he's not that good. Because then maybe he would have 4 Super Bowl losses, which is such a terrible thing than never going to the game. But yeah, I mean, he's in discussion. Obviously, we've talked about it with Jordan and Russell and all these other guys that are like just all-time great winners. That's the only discussion. And so at that point, yeah, just go for the personal stats and say maybe the guy's going to throw 700 touchdown passes and maybe win 4 MVPs, which especially since one of them would be at the age of 44 and the other one would be the age of 40.
Yeah.
Like if he won at 40, then he'd win one at 44. That'd be kind of crazy. Yeah, so you can go with all that. I'm at the point where Rodgers, the stats are nice because I think when he retires, his numbers are going to be, you know, superb. But I need wins, yeah. And I need another Super Bowl. So it's a little bit different dynamic between mm-hmm. our two guys.
Yeah, and look, I mean, you know, I know obviously the in thing now is obviously to accuse Brady of stat padding, ignoring the fact that he's been taken out of several games this season in which they could have legitimately padded stats if they wanted to. But the reality of it is the Bucs need him to throw 50-some-odd times a game.
Right.
And yeah. Luckily for the Bucs, he is literally, this isn't hyperbole, this isn't me just being, you know, over the top, you know, whatever. He is literally the only quarterback in the history of the NFL that is capable of winning more games than not when throwing more than 40 times and throwing more than 50. He improved yesterday to 21-10 in his career. No other quarterback has more than 5 wins in that situation.
Crazy.
That's
a crazy ball number.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite numbers because, again, and it kind of speaks to, you know, I think, you know, he didn't wrap it up by any means, but I think he did, you know, once again gain a little bit of comfort in the MVP race. I think it's going to take quite a bit from him and others to knock him down from that pedestal. But what really just, you know, and I know the in thing was, and I hope it's gone away by now, is the Lamar Jackson thing. I've at this point, I'm almost disgusted by it because of how much people were pushing it just a couple weeks ago. And based on what I've seen the last couple weeks, I'm really questioning what people have been watching.
It's not a discussion at all. I mean, the only other discussion, obviously, Rodgers, who didn't play yesterday. I think Kyler Murray did well for himself yesterday.
He's missed 3 games, though. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not even going to entertain his name. Because again, it's like, look, if I don't care what it was, you missed the games. I'm sorry. I mean, look, Brady got knocked for it in 2016, and a lot of other players have been knocked for it before. I think what's the only it might have been Joe Montana, might have been the only MVP that have, or one of those early mid-90s MVPs where the only quarterback that had missed like 2 games or whatever and still won it.
Right.
You know, so it's, but anyways, my point being, like
plays all the remaining games, so he would have played 16 out of 17. He could win it. And the other quarterback that may throw in if he has a huge game tonight is Josh Allen, because he's still second in terms of the betting odds, but I think a lot of that has
the problem is, though, you and I both know that as much as this is about play, it's also about stats. And right now, Brady has separated himself to the point where, like, it's going to be very hard for anyone to even approach those numbers. Guys like Rodgers, obviously, even Josh Allen. But my point is, Brady's throwing more than any other player in the league. Now, again, the anti-Brady folks will sit there and be like, well, of course he's leading and everything. Yeah, blah, 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 of course this. Well, no, that actually kind of further hammers home the point that he is clearly the most valuable player in this league. The Bucs rely more on him than any player is relied on in this league. You know, people will point to Lamar Jackson. Yeah, okay, you may rely on Lamar Jackson, but he doesn't deliver. Like, I don't care how much you rely on a player. If he doesn't deliver, I'm not giving him credit for how much, you know, maybe you perceive that he's, you know, the talent around him is bringing him down, because right now he is not playing anywhere close to an MVP level. Hell, he's not even playing, he's hardly playing top 15 quarterback level. That's how absurd it's gotten. But, you know, Brady is throwing more than anyone. And to my point earlier, he's proven to be the only player to consistently be able to win. And it is. It's one of my favorite Tom Brady numbers or stats or tidbits. It's like, this is one of those things that separates him, because no other, like yesterday, starting the game, they knew he was throwing. He threw the ball 15 straight times, and they could not stop it. And to me, I'm just sitting there laughing. Like, people are going to use that to knock him, just like people use a game in which he won a Super Bowl to somehow knock his legacy, which makes me scratch my head even today. But to me, it just further proves that he is the MVP of this league, and that the Bucks are so dependent on his arm that it's a good thing to have him to be the guy that you're dependent on, but it could also ultimately lead to maybe a one bad game here and there, because like we talked about last week, even if Tom in the offense starts relatively slow, that could be a big problem for the Buccaneers. So
yeah, I mean, their defense is still spotty. I mean, they were okay yesterday. They put pressure on Matt Ryan, but he's Matt Ryan, and he doesn't have his best wide receiver, Calvin Ridley. And, you know, Atlanta's just a middling team. And it's amazing that Brady's 10-0. And when I kept seeing that stat, I'm like, how often do you play the Atlanta Falcons? And then, of course, it hit me again that he's 4-0 since he went to Tampa Bay. But he was 6-0 with the Patriots, and they only play every 4 years. And, yes, they played once in a Super Bowl. I'm like, it's nearly impossible to beat a team 10 times when they're in the other conference for most of your career. The number that was flashed yesterday that really startled me and you know, probably gave me some agita, which is a nice way of saying upset stomach in Italian, was seeing that John Elway was 11-0 against the Patriots.
Oof, and yeah.
That was incredible. And the Patriots had some good teams back then, Ian, too. I mean, we're talking about the mid-80s. The Patriots went to a Super Bowl. The mid-90s, they went to a Super Bowl. I think when people talk about the history of quarterbacks, he gets forgotten somewhat. I know it seems like Marino gets more love than Elway. Elway was the better quarterback.
Question. I agree.
Yeah, I think Elway, I've said this a million times, and it's not a knock against anyone else. I think if every quarterback had gone into the same situation, he may be right there with Brady as the greatest quarterback ever. I mean, that's how high I was on him when he came out of Stanford. I mean, he literally is the total package. He had the intangibles like Brady, the leadership, the toughness, the smarts, all that athletic ability. All things being equal, he would have been right there with Brady. That would have been the discussion. Who's the greatest quarterback ever? Is it Brady or Elway if they've gone through the similar situations? But, yeah, I think people forget about him, and they give more love to Marino than John Elway when Elway was the better quarterback. But, yeah, but to go 10-0 against a team that you've spent most of your career in the other conference, that's like, I kept looking at him, wait a second, has Brady played 40 years now?
Yeah.
I go, wait a second, I forgot, he's in Tampa now.
Yeah, and it definitely helps, you know, since 2016, obviously, you've gotten a few of those, and I believe they did get a rematch when he was still in New England. So there's about half of those games have come in the last 5 years. So, you know, so if you think about it that way, it does kind of make more sense. And if I remember correctly, I believe they played each other, or they played the Falcons his in 2001. So
they won in Atlanta. Yep.
Yeah. So they had to, you know, again, the very first year he was starting. So that's like the only way that number could have materialized at this point. So, So I think, look, I think he's, you know, as he has been for the last couple of weeks, although again, you know, you could open the door for a couple other guys, but I think he's very firmly in the driver's seat right now for his fourth MVP. And you know, if you're a Bucks fan, and you know, like myself, if you're a Brady fan, and you know, assuming they don't play the Patriots in the Super Bowl, you'd be rooting for him to win. But he would also have to again break the MVP curse of Kurt Warner being the only guy to have, or last guy, to have won both the NFL MVP and the Super Bowl in the same season. So Brady's had an opportunity to do it a couple times.
You know what's interesting? But Ian, I checked into the 99 Rams a little bit because, you know, it's 20-odd years ago. I do have a good memory. Sometimes it has to be refreshed. Warner was the league MVP. He was the Super Bowl MVP. They won the Super Bowl. So as you said, he's the last regular season MVP to also win a Super Bowl in the same year. It was his defense that was huge in the conference championship game over Tampa. Believe it or not, the Rams won that game 11-6. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think we've ever seen a score of 11-6, but that was the NFC Championship game. And then they beat the Titans 23-16. So as great as Kurt Warner was in that year, his defense stepped up huge in the NFC Championship game and in the Super Bowl. So I don't know if the Tampa defense, I think they have it within them to do that, to step up big in a NFC Championship game or a Super Bowl. But I think there's even more pressure on Brady at the age of 44 than there was on Warner back in 1999. And that's... Nobody better to trust than Tom Brady with the world, the weight of the world on his shoulders. But it's almost unfair, right?
Well, they
have an off day and they lose and people say, see, I told you, he's ready to fall.
Well, you know, and it starts with his head coach. Like, his head coach, yeah, you know, is just a boob sometimes. And it's like, you know, like, sometimes it's like, come on, man. Like, you don't have to put this, like, little show on, you know, in front of the cameras. Like, you know, sometimes just, like, except that, I don't know, like, I had a problem, like, you remember a couple weeks ago when he blamed both those interceptions on Brady when one of them was clear, like, again, clearly right in right. the basket, bread basket of the receiver, and it just deflected out of his hands. Like, no, like, it's almost as ridiculous as Russell Wilson saying he rehabbed 19 hours a day. It's like, right. There's room for cliche. There's room for hyperbole. There's room for that type of stuff in coach speak. There is. I mean, I'm not sitting there saying you have to be completely honest, but it's also very transparent when you go beyond that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just at a certain point, you just cross a line where you're like, okay, now you're just being ridiculous. Like, pump the brakes a little bit. No, but that's what I'm saying. The Bucs rely so much on Brady. And I think that the defense is bad. I mean, look, they have talent on this team. There's no doubt about it. No one's saying that they don't have talent. But there's a lot of teams in the NFL that have a lot of talent. Like, Tampa's not the only team. And I know people use it a lot to kind of diminish what Brady's accomplished. And, oh, you know, of course he went to this. You know, I love the stacked team narrative. You know, he went to the team that literally had the worst winning percentage in the history of sports. And he's considered a guy going to a super team. It's just, it's silly. You know, the Bucs have had guys like Mike Evans, Cameron Brate, Chris Godwin, the likes of them, Levante David, since 2017. And trust me, Jameis Winston wasn't throwing 30 interceptions in 2017. So Brady's the most important player on that team. He's the most valuable player in this league. And really, he's one of the reasons why, and it benefits his defense, is other teams are worried about the Bucs' offense. So you know what? It sometimes lends to doing things out of your comfort zone, and that leads to mistakes. And that's when the Bucs defense capitalizes. When the other team starts to force it, when they realize that, you know, Tom and this offense, they're not going to not score. You know, they're just going to go down the field. They're going to get some points. But if they start slow, all of a sudden, there you go. There's the door, and, you know, you got to play from behind. And we know Tom and the offense is capable of doing that. It's just not the habit you want to have throughout the season.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think they still look like one of the two or three best teams in the NFC. I still think it's going to be them and Green Bay in the NFC Championship game rematch, unless Arizona's the one seed, gets the bye, and then wins the divisional round. Then, just the way it's laid out, Arizona would be in the NFC Championship game. And look, they just keep winning. They're 10-2.
Yeah.
All seven road games by more than double digits, which is damn impressive. And then some of those wins, you know, we're on the road against the Rams and some other good teams at Tennessee first week of the season. But I don't think we're buying into them still. You know, I think it was 2008. Remember Tennessee was 10-0?
Yeah.
And they're talking about, oh, Tennessee's going to be, you know, tough to beat. And then they lost in the divisional round to the
Well, Ravens. even Pittsburgh last year, you know, 10-0. Right. And it was just like, I just, like, we're looking at it and it's just like, I don't see it. Now, granted, I do think Arizona's better, and I'm starting to come around to them a little bit more. Part of it was just because, look, Kyler Murray was out. It felt like we didn't really get to see them. And where we both are located is, it's kind of tough to see a lot of Arizona Cardinals football. But I was actually getting that feeling yesterday when they were reading down kind of the splits for the Ravens and talking about how they have this, like, negative point differential, they have this negative turnover differential, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, how did anyone think that this is a good team? Like, I know, like, they happen to have, you know, won some games, but to me, this is like, I mean, you're talking about giant red flag after red flag, just like, okay, this is this is pinpointing fraud. Now, this is great because I did want to kind of get in on this before we talk a little bit about Monday Night Football tonight. I thought yesterday was one of the worst displays of coaching decision making I've ever seen in my life. Just one after another. Just if you remember last week, I don't know if anyone saw it on Twitter, but a tweet made the rounds when it was concerning Bill Belichick and his coach of the year status. And this one notable person decided to say that, you know, I'm wrestling, quote unquote, with Belichick's coach of the year candidacy because of his lack of aggressiveness on fourth down. And I thought that was just absurdly stupid. Okay. Cause if you're looking at everything Bill Belichick has done this season, and then you're one, well, involves his lack of aggressiveness on fourth down, then I really worry about the future evaluation of the sport. But, It couldn't have worked out better for me, John. Yesterday, I'm sitting here watching all this play out. Obviously, Sunday Night Football, Denver. What are you doing? Why are you going for it? Well, Patrick, no, I don't care. This isn't 2018. This Chiefs offense has not moved the ball efficiently and well for much of the season. You gave up 6 points in a game that was really close. I know the score ended up being fairly, you know, different there at the end, but you literally gave up 6 points. 6 points in a game that you could have been within one score late in that game because of what? Because you got too cute, because you got down to in field goal range. We're not talking about long field goals. I'm pretty sure these were within the, like, 35-yard range. I mean, pretty makeable field goal for any field goal kicker out there. And then you have the Lions, who fell ass backwards into a win. I mean, going for it in your own territory, up by 2 points in a game that really wasn't that high scoring, was I thought Dan Campbell should have been fired before that game was over. Luckily for him, the Lions somehow win that game. And, you know, this is going to be chalked up as just one of those quirky moments in the history of Detroit Lions football, and there's a lot of them. And then, John, last night, the Baltimore Ravens going up against the Pittsburgh Penguins and a quarterback that literally cannot throw the ball straight and beyond 5 yards. You have a chance to tie the game, and you decide, well, I'm big John Harbaugh. I'm going to go for two. Go for it, you know? And you lose, because guess what? Lamar Jackson doesn't recognize the blitz coming. He reacts poorly. He rolls out and throws a bad pass. Incomplete. Game over. All dumb decisions. All dumb coaching decisions. And it drives me nuts, John. And I sit there and I thank the football gods that I am a fan of a team that has Bill Belichick as their coach. Because,
well, don't you think Bill Belichick should have went for it on fourth down against Tampa? Which because he settled for, what, a 56-yard field goal attempt that hit the upright. And Tampa ran a block. And again,
that's back.
I mean, I think he should have been more aggressive in that particular game.
Okay, okay. So instead of kicking the field goal, go for it on fourth down. Okay. Other than that, if you want to criticize him for that, that's fine. To me, that's nitpicking because at the end of the day, like, he's probably sitting back watching these games and like thinking like, what the hell are these people doing? John Harbaugh is considered, or, you know, some consider him within that, like, you know, fringe elite. I used that term last week. Fringe elite coaching class. What the hell is that? And, I mean, this is a guy that continuously, you know, he gets praised for his, you know, oh, going for it here, going for it there. Oh, he does this. He goes that. It's a gamble. It's all it is, and it's a gamble. If it works, it's great. If it doesn't, well, guess what? He ended up costing his team a game. Like,
well, Belichick did go fourth and two at his own 28 back in 2009, and I get that it was Manning on the other side.
Were any of those coaches going up against Peyton Manning? Like I said, no. The Ravens going up against Ben Roethlisberger, who can barely move 2 feet and throw the ball 5 feet.
Here's the thing on that particular call. He said after the game that he was down 3 cornerbacks. Now, that doesn't mean that in overtime you're not going to get the ball first and you can go down and score a touchdown and win the game. you also could look at it that, and I think to push back on Harbaugh, you have the greatest field goal kicker in the history of the sport, and Justin Tucker. Either him or Adam Vinatieri. I know Vinatieri with all the Super Bowls and all that stuff is considered, this guy's the best right now still. So you have the better field goal kicker going into overtime, so that's a plus, right? I just think that he felt that with Roethlisberger actually playing well in the fourth quarter, that they would have been tough to stop if he loses the coin flip. Again,
He got too cute. I mean, I think that's
the call was good. The play was good. The call was good. It's just Lamar Jackson makes a bad throw.
The call wasn't good because it wasn't completed. Well, I mean, like, we can sit there and play, but, like, if the call was good, they'd have protection in there. There was two free rushers on Lamar Jackson, which forced Lamar Jackson to scramble, and as soon as he does that, the call goes awry. So I don't believe it was a good call. If it was a good call, they would have accounted for that, but they didn't.
T.J. Watt blew up the play, which that's what great players do. The other thing, that's not an RPO option where he had the ball in the bucket of the running back, pulled it out, and he's got his tight end. By the way, I think that kid's maybe the best. Well, Gronk is still the best tight end in football, and Kittle's. Mark Andrews is a great tight end, isn't he, considering that lot of the ball are nowhere near him. He has to make more circus catches than any other tight end in football, and I always give him a shout-out, fellow diabetic. So I really like Mark Andrews. But, yeah, I mean, a better throw, he walks in for the two-point conversion. So I'm not that against that call. I thought the play design was fine. It's just that Lamar is not accurate enough to make that throw. Maybe you have to weigh that, too, when you make the call.
Like, absolutely. Absolutely. Like what gave John Harbaugh the confidence to think that Lamar Jackson was going to make that play? Again, I think in hindsight, people would say, this about the corners, this, that, and the other. No, I mean, it was a dumb decision. It was a dumb decision that, it essentially cost them a chance to win a game that they very much could have won in that situation. Like, I mean, he got too cute. But this is who John Harbaugh is. This is what he does. This is his reputation. He's a guy who'll get up there, and if it goes his way, he'll celebrate. If not, he's going to complain. Or he'll sit there and blame something else or shift the blame. No, it was a bad decision. Own it. You shouldn't have gone for it. You should have just kicked the field goal. But, but that's the thing, John. That's what everyone's into now. Oh, analytics. How... I rail against stats all the time when it comes to individual performance, and I wish I had enough energy and time to do it against coaching decisions, because I think it's absolutely taken over logical thought process. Like, everyone's sitting there thinking they can glean every bit of information about that current situation based on a piece of paper. Well, no, you can't, because every situation is different. And, like, people say, well, you convert these 99% of the time, or this is a 70% success rate. No, I don't care about that. All that is jibber-jabber to me. What I want to see is, in the moment, the situation, and I feel like literally every single one of those decisions yesterday were the wrong situation. And Belichick sitting back with it, sipping his orange juice, scratching Nike on the head, and, just laughing about how much better he is than everyone else.
Well, I mean, the Tampa Bay game stood out to me that because of who you're playing against, you don't want to give him the ball even down, because he's going to go down and kick a game-winning field goal.
Mac Jones in his fourth career start. I think there's considerable context there.
Although 56-yard field goal
with one of the best kickers in the league, by the way,
he's not great from beyond 50. He's really good.
He's been really good beyond 50 this year. That's the thing. Like, I mean, trusting Nick Folk and sitting here and criticizing trusting Nick Folk to go for, a long field goal, but in a game that was really close, he was giving up a reasonable chance at points. Now, again, you go back and say, well, maybe it was a little bit out of range, but that's the thing. Belichick wasn't giving up points, and that almost lends credit to, my belief that he's sitting there laughing at the decisions made, because all those coaches essentially gave up points except for Dan Campbell, who decided to apparently give up the win and then somehow get
Campbell
it back.
He did an NBA thing. He's figuring two possessions for one. Yeah. Because he doesn't make it, Minnesota's going to score anyway.
Well, maybe he should go coach in the NBA then.
It worked out for him because...
That's what I'm saying. Just because it worked out doesn't mean it was a good decision. No,
So fourth and two against Indianapolis didn't work out. So, and I was for that. I was for him doing
But again, those are two totally different situations.
I also think if you look at the game yesterday, now Roethlisberger was god awful for three quarters. He heated up in the fourth quarter. As bad as he is, right? And I think this is going to be his last year. That's what the reports were over the weekend. He still can get hot. Like, he was 10 for 11 in the fourth quarter. He is a rhythm passer when he feels good about himself and is in some sort of rhythm. He can still throw the football.
So you're telling me that John Harbaugh decided to make a decision based on several hypotheticals as opposed to one that was in front of him. You either kick the field goal and tie the game or you risk losing the game.
Did Bill Belichick do the same thing? Hypotheticals. I can't again, stop Peyton.
Again, that's Peyton. It was Peyton Manning in a situation where
the fourth quarter of that game yesterday, they put up 17 points in the fourth quarter, which shocked the hell out of me. He got hot. I mean, and that had a way. If it was a
I'm not sure. You know, maybe you're a big John Harbaugh. I think it was a bad decision. I think there's no justifying it. I think it was just a bad decision on his part. Like, he kicks the field goal, the game is tied, and you do what you do. You play football.
Are we gonna? Okay, we remember 5 years ago when Jack Del Rio went for two against New Orleans, made it, won the game, and that was that. And they actually went on and went 12-4 that year, made the playoffs.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I'm not opposed to all of that stuff. I think there's certain situations where it feels like the right move. I'll go back to the 2015 playoff game. Why not? When Rodgers hit two Hail Marys to get within 1 point of Arizona, and they just kicked the extra point, and then lost the toss in overtime, and the team went down and scored the game-winning touchdown in overtime. At that point, I'm yelling at the TV, go for two in that situation, because the other team is completely on its heels. Especially back-to-back Hail Marys. Arizona was like walking around the field going, what the hell just happened? I'd go for two in that situation. Just end the game there rather than flip a coin.
They could have ended the game by failing. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there saying, like, well, why didn't you give yourself a chance in overtime? Or why didn't you take the points? Like, again, points are valuable, and people just disregard them. Like, every situation's different, so I don't have as strong of a recollection of that game as you do, of course. But, again, like I said, you can't compare situation to situation because every situation is different. The nature of the game, the nature of the opponent, the nature of the person that you're playing, the nature of your team. Like, you know, that Patriots defense that decided to do that, they were god-awful. This was 2011, correct?
2009.
Okay, yeah, they were. That was probably the very worst Patriots team of this entire run, including that 9-7 team that didn't make the playoffs in 2002. They just got a little bit too full of themselves. That 2009 team was bad because not only did they have bad players, they had bad attitudes, they had bad personnel, they had, you know, the Adalys Thomas, all that stuff. They were a bad team that just could not stop a Peyton Manning in the middle of an MVP campaign.
I was for that. I was too.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the situations where it's so hard to compare the two because in this situation, yeah, okay, Ben Roethlisberger had a pretty nice fourth quarter, but, you know, anticipating and imagining and you know, assuming that he continues to do that when he hasn't done that in his entire season. Is one, you're basically saying you don't believe in your defense that had played fairly well at that point. I mean, again, they had only allowed how many? What, I don't even remember what the exact the end of the score was. So I don't. Yeah,
20-19.
They weren't.
He had no cornerbacks left because Marlon Humphrey hurt his shoulder. They already didn't have Marcus Peters, so he's just rolling the dice, saying, if we go to overtime and they win the toss, I don't think we can stop them. So let's just end it right here. The play design was right. It's just, you know, Lamar's going to be better than that, and that's why he's not an elite quarterback, especially inside the pocket.
Yeah, I agree with that because, you know, I was scratching my head the last couple of weeks trying to figure out how he managed to get himself in this situation. And again, he gets, and this isn't true. This is true for not just him, but for others as well. They get credit for. I don't know. It's tough. They get credit for being a lesser player, but being in a more perceived crappier situation. I don't even know. Like, it's hard to explain. But I felt yesterday that very strongly that coaching was had a hand in poor, very poor coaching was on display. Decision making, at the very least. All right. So we only have about five.
I'm not I'm not a big fan of coaching in the NFL right now. Like I said, it's Belichick, and I don't know who the hell the second best coach is.
Yeah.
They throw whatever name you want out there, and it's, I'll buy into it or I'll push back against it. Absolutely.
We do have a game tonight. I do want to mention it real quick before we have to get off the air.
Good.
Obviously, as a result of the Ravens losing, the Patriots are now officially, or not officially, but technically right now the number one seed in the conference. They play tonight, them in Buffalo. Big, big, big game tonight in Buffalo. The winner, if the Patriots win, they'd have a pretty comfortable position atop the conference heading into their bye week. But if they lose, they would drop down to the fifth seed. That's just how tight this AFC is right now. This isn't a homer pick. I picked New England. I just they've been the better team for several weeks now. I mean, their defense has been incredible. Their offense, and I know people like to talk about max limitations. This offense is scoring over 30 points a game during their winning streak. I mean, that and we're talking 6-7 straight games. I mean, actually, it's been longer because, you know, you think back to that Dallas game, they put up, 29 points in that game? So, you know, they're averaging over the course of essentially half a season over 30 points a game. And they don't seem to be being figured out quite yet. Like, sometimes you can sit there and see the averages and say, okay, but, you know, the last couple weeks they've started to kind of slow. No, this Patriots team is moving very well. Buffalo without Tre'Davious White, that's going to be a huge loss for them. And quite frankly, I just don't think Josh Allen's playing great football. And I think this Patriots defense is playing great. And I think they're going to create turnovers tonight and make life fairly miserable for Josh Allen.
Yeah, it's supposed to be wet and windy, which would lead you to believe that Josh Allen will be fine in that. But actually, the way the Patriots play, I think they're kind of built for that. You know, building on that running game, taking care of the football, playing the great situational football that they usually play. I like the Patriots, too, in this game because I think that they're going to be able to get their game plan and carry it out because the weather is going to enhance that. So I think that they chance to win this game, and I think they will again. The only thing that I sounded like Mike Ditka there, I didn't like finish a sentence. The one thing I would get concerned about is if they get behind, because we haven't seen that necessarily. And then if you've got Mac Jones throwing 42 passes, that, I don't think that's a good thing, especially if it's windy and rainy and all that stuff. But if they can just build on a really good start, get out to, you know, 6-7-10 point lead, Josh Allen at some point will screw up. It's just a way tired. He's just gonna throw an interception that you're gonna go, where the hell was he throwing that ball? Yeah, game against New Orleans on Thanksgiving, he threw two interceptions. You're like, there was no one around. It was just strictly opposing players, and he still managed to try to, you know, fit it through all of them. So yeah, I like the Patriots tonight. I think they're playing really well, and I think that the weather will impact them less than it will impact Buffalo, which has become more of a finesse team, and the Patriots become of a power team.
Yeah, and look, the Patriots are a really good running team as well. And you figure, all right, sloppy, slow conditions type of thing, you know. They love the slop, John. They love the slop. They're a mutter. Their mutter was a mutter. They're all mutters there. So if it does get wet and it does get muddy, I do like the Patriots' chances. Yep. And, you know, to your point about obviously not seeing the comeback, in Mac's situation, it's not so much that I agree, like, you know, we haven't necessarily seen that yet. We've seen some key moments that he's come through. You know, you can look to the Dallas game and give him credit for some of the things that he did, of course. You know, you can't just, chalk it up at just, well, a loss is a loss. Well, a loss is a loss. There's no doubt about it. But Mac did do some good things. So I do believe he can do it, but I am with you. I need to see it, though. Like, I believe based on the collective works, not of Bette Midler, but of Mac Jones, that I believe he's capable of doing that, if that's the case. But ideally, you don't want to play from behind. That's not right. Like, you know, I know people make the jokes, oh, right where they want him. No, that's not what you want to do. You don't want to play from behind. So, yeah, I got the Patriots, and hopefully I'm right about this one, because I was wrong on a lot of my picks this weekend.
Yesterday, I think I only had one loss.
Oof.
I kept track of all of them, and the only one I didn't have is pick the Bears to beat Arizona in an upset, but I did pick the Lions to beat the Vikings. That was my end. I did okay. I mean, you know, that and $2 get you a cup of coffee somewhere, but you know, that's okay.
Well,
go against me next week, because I'll go like 4-10 next week.
Well, don't worry. I have my fantasy season is over. I will be focusing solely on making my picks work. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow to break down Monday Night Football and talk about some other stuff. So have a great day, and we'll talk to you then.